You're listening to View from the Couch, a podcast about TV, movies, DVD, and just about anything from parents with children. And now, your hosts, Kent and Michelle. Welcome to View from the Couch, and may the 4th be with you.
Yes. Like he said.
Every year. That's awesome, every year.
You just ended up lucky that it was a Wednesday this
year. That's right. I just wander around telling people, may the 4th be with you. And they go, what? Oh. Because most people know my sad Star Wars fixation.
Yeah, we do.
So what's happening? Our computer died. I tried to cyber exercise it many times. I hate PCs. That's what it comes down to. I'm very, very close to getting a Macintosh, I believe. But in the meantime, one of my aunts, I guess my dad's sister, she had a PC that she wasn't using because she has a laptop. So my oldest brother had this PC and he just said, you want it? Here, just take it. So big pain in the neck.
But we're all good now.
So I still have to transfer email PST files and blah, blah, but
better you than me.
Very annoying. That's right. Better me than me and you.
Yeah.
A lot of changes in the world this week. This past week, a lot of changes, and not little tiny things, but large,
significant
things. Let's start happy. Well, they're all happy, I guess. But let's start with the, of course, the wedding of Prince William and Catherine Middleton, which was supposedly watched by or seen by 2 billion people around the world, which is not bad because that's about a third of the world's population.
That's pretty crazy.
That's a significant event.
I would have been crazy nervous if I was her. Everybody is analyzing every tiny speck of your appearance.
I would have been crazy nervous if I was her, too, because first of all, I would have no idea how to behave like a woman. And I would have the...
And these shoes are a killer.
And if I was her, I would be... The song Dude Looks Like a Lady would be playing in my head over... And over and over.
All right, okay.
And I probably would have been uncontrollably weeping the whole time.
Uh-huh, okay.
Trapped in a woman's body.
Right.
Yeah, it's scrutiny, that's for sure. But I think the British people love, the majority of them, love the monarchy so much. And especially, I mean, this is Diana's oldest son.
Yes.
This is Diana Spencer's oldest son, and she was just loved beyond the word love by the British people. And so for her oldest son, William, to be getting married, and just a girl that seems so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they seem very down to earth. They seem like a very nice couple. They've obviously, you know, they went out of their way to invite friends and people that meant a lot to them to their wedding. Now, granted, this was not a coronation kind of wedding, so this wasn't to the same degree as if the heir to the throne was getting married. I mean, he is an heir to the throne, but if the next person in line for the throne or the person who is currently in a king or queen were to get married, that's a huge, huge, huge event. But this, I mean, this was still very, very significant.
And in a way, it was lucky that that wasn't their situation, because they would not have been able to invite the people they did,
right,
if they were in that situation. And so they were able to have things a little more the way they wanted them,
yeah,
and not so much having to follow protocols. So that was kind of nice for them.
Well, the other thing, too, that was neat is parallel between Charles and Diana's marriage was that, like Diana, Catherine was not of royal blood. So she's not aristocracy. She's not any of that. So she's a commoner, as they say. So she's marrying into the royal family to a position of status. So that's one thing. She is not known as Princess Catherine.
No.
Just because she marries the prince, someone who is a prince. But the queen, just before they got married and they did get married on Friday, by the way, 29th of April. So just about a week ago. So when they got married, just before they got married, the queen conferred titles upon William, which was Duke of Cambridge, Earl of Strathern, and Baron Carrickfergus. So William as the Duke of Cambridge. Catherine becomes known as Her Royal Highness, the Duchess of Cambridge. So she's not Princess Catherine.
Right.
But, you know, once the Queen leaves office, and if Prince Charles takes his position as king, and then William takes his place, when William becomes King of England, Catherine will be Queen. No, she won't.
No, she'd be Princess.
She's, yes, because she's the consort. That's right.
Yeah.
Because Prince Philip, the Queen's husband. Right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So as Canadians, this is a big deal for us. You know, it may not mean as much to some other country, people in other countries around the world who may not have a tie to a royal family or monarchy or anything like that. But I think a lot of people feel it's outdated and it's become irrelevant. But I'm still very proud to be part of a monarchy, and I think it's very cool. And
it's
just an amazing event to watch. I don't know. Not everybody probably had the chance to see the whole thing, but we were able to see the BBC broadcast of pretty much everything leading up from the morning to the wedding, right through the whole wedding ceremony, through the
balcony
processional.
Kiss.
Yeah, the processional to the balcony kiss, and the flyby, the Royal Air Force flyby of the Lancaster bombers, which were pivotal in World War II and in England's victory over Nazi Germany.
Actually, it was a Lancaster, a Spitfire, and a something else, and then four other ones that were more updated.
More modern.
Yeah.
And this is probably a direct connection to the fact that Prince William is in the Royal Air Force, and he's actually based as a RAF search and rescue pilot. He's a helicopter co-pilot. Which is very cool.
That is cool.
And now that they are married, they're probably going to continue living on the Isle of Anglesey, which is in northern Wales, which is where Prince William is stationed as an RAF pilot. So they're going to be living there. So
yeah,
very cool. So that was a huge event. And chances are, if you didn't see part of it, you heard part of it. Or there's if you want to see the kiss, go to YouTube.
Yeah.
Tons of stuff. There's tons of coverage.
And the dress. We have to talk about the dress.
Go ahead. Talk about the dress.
it was a lot. I mean, compared to
Diana's train was about three or four times as long.
At least her train was only 110 inches or 270 centimeters.
But she had a nice caboose on her train.
She wore a tiara that was lent to her by the Queen. And Prince William wore the uniform of his honorary rank of Colonel of the Irish Guards.
Cool.
And Prince Harry had a different suit uniform on, and we were trying to figure out what it was, but I don't see it here. Anyways, but her dress was not, I mean, it could have been way over the top, and she really was, it was very classic and
It was classic and contemporary at the same time. Like, it was very understated.
Mm-hmm. It was pretty.
And yet very classy. And it had, you know, I mean, the sleeves were lace and...
Yep.
And so you can Elton see John, pictures of that, Elton too. John had a similar dress on that really, you know, kind of paid...
He was there, though.
He was there.
Not in a dress.
Beautiful purple tie. Purple tie? Pink tie? I can't remember.
Him and his significant other.
So there were lots of people there. There was David Beckham, David and Victoria, and lots of people... other members of royal families from around the world, dignitaries and things like that. But again, as Michelle said before, because it wasn't considered a full-blown state event, William and Catherine were able to invite some of their friends and some of their close acquaintances and the people that were involved.
Beautiful venue, getting married in the Westminster Abbey.
Yes, Westminster
Gorgeous,
Abbey.
Gorgeous, huge
wow.
church.
We keep meaning to get to London, and we haven't managed to do it, but we must.
And something that was really cool was they had trees brought in to line the aisle.
Yeah, that was neat.
It was really gorgeous. Neat idea.
It was announced that the costs of the wedding itself were met by the royal family and the Middletons, but the costs of security and transport were covered by the British Treasury, so covered by the government. The couple had also asked that donations be made to charities in place of traditional wedding gifts. So that's cool, because I'm sure they're not hard up for cash.
No. And also, I think it was a bit of a... Due to the fact that the country and the world in general, and for the most part, is in a recession, I think they were trying to be somewhat politically correct as well.
Yes. one source reported the wedding at approximately 20 million pounds. So if you know the translation, pounds, Canadian dollars a little bit higher than US dollar right now. 20 million pounds is roughly $40 million. So it's roughly double.
Right.
I mean, and there are lots of average weddings that are 10, you know, I mean, that are not $10 million, but it seems like 40 million annual annual salary for a fairly decent person's wage.
Yeah.
No, yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah. I think
it's a lot of money.
Definitely way more than the general population spends on their wedding.
I think ours was, what, $10? And we split it, so it cost us $5 each.
Yeah, no, I don't think it was quite that little. All right, so I guess that's about it for the wedding, hey?
And another major event that happened actually late Sunday evening, this past Sunday. So the wedding happened Friday, and then Sunday evening, I was just heading to bed and grabbed my iPad and was reading some news. And all of a sudden, there was a story from CNN that Osama bin Laden had been found and killed. He was found, a U.S. strike team went in, composed of Navy SEALs and SEAL Team 6, which is the elite Navy SEAL team, as well as some CIA people and operatives, and went into a compound north of Afghanistan, or north of Islamabad, which is the capital of Pakistan, and they found him. There was a firefight, and they got him. They got him, and they took possession of the body, took the body back onto a U.S. naval vessel, and I was quite impressed by this. They followed Muslim religious protocol of, you know, they washed the body, and the body needs to be buried within 24 hours, so they actually buried him at sea. So there have been photos taken of the body and all sorts of things that haven't been released yet, as I understand. But President Obama gave an amazing speech live right around the time the event happened. And he said, this is what happened. This is what was done. You know, we're proud of the people that did it. This is a time of, you know, this is a time of relief for people who lost their families, of people who lost their lives on 9/11. But also, it's not a time for us to sit back and relax and think, you know, this is taken care of. The world's a safer place. While it's a significant blow and a significant step in the war against terror and the war against terrorism around the world, it also, you know, it's just a step. It's a big step, but it's a step. So we need to remain vigilant and not let down our guard. But at the same time, it's a big deal. This man was on the run for about a decade, and we got him. They got him. So, you know, thanks to U.S. military families around the world who were involved in this operation. And, yeah, it's great news. And then, of course, early this week, we had the Canadian federal election. So we went out and voted on Monday, and the Canadian Conservative Party of Canada, Prime Minister Stephen Harper, they were operating in a minority government position, but swayed that to a majority. So there is no second party in power. It is the Conservative Party of Canada that is now in power in our country, and Prime Minister Stephen Harper stays in office.
We'll see how that takes us.
We'll see how it takes us. A lot of people are nervous about the fact that having a majority government for the Conservative Party removes some of the checks and balances that might have been in place and gives them a little bit more power to do some things that people may not have already been agreeing with. But that said, it also removes some restraints so that they can properly govern the country. So so we'll see what happens. It's a new time, and it's a time of excitement for and anticipation for a lot of people, and it's a time of a little bit nervous for others who are maybe not sure. This is not their party of choice, and we'll see what happens with this party in power.
Yes.
So this week we looked at Chronicles of Narnia.
We did.
Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
Yes.
Talk about it, if you will.
Well, it was beautifully done. Gorgeous photography and cinematography and set construction and
everything.
CG effects and, yeah. It was really, really beautiful to see, to watch. And I think, from what I understand, I believe it has done better than the previous two installments of... This is now the third in the Chronicles of Narnia that has been made into a movie. And I think it did really well, from what I understand.
Just bear with me. Your research assistant here is working on some things behind the scenes.
But the kids really liked it a lot. Connor was, as usual, reluctant to partake of it.
The child is reluctant all the time.
He's always, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to. And then we convince him, and he's like, oh, thank you. It was so good. I'm enjoying it so much. Thank you for convincing me.
The film has grossed $415 million, $415.6 million worldwide, including 104.3 in North America, as well as 311.27 in other parts of the world. It's the 12th highest grossing film worldwide of 2010, as well as Fox's highest grossing film of that year, ahead of Night and Day and ahead of Percy Jackson and the Olympians, The Lightning Thief. It opened in 355 theaters across the U.S. and Canada on December 10th. And on its opening day, the film grossed $8.3 million, which was, oh dear, you were wrong, which was far lower than the $23 million The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe made on its opening day in 2005. Oh dear.
And also much lower
than Prince Caspian, which had an opening gross of $19.4 million in 2008. So although it debuted at number one in box office and grossed $24 million for its opening weekend, it was less than the opening weekends of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe and Prince Caspian.
But how did it do overall?
So despite its disappointing opening weekend, Fox believed that word of mouth and the holiday season in 2010 would help the film hold well. Second weekend, it dropped, 48%, which is the smallest second weekend drop in the franchise, which is good. So it held its own a little bit. The second weekend, it came in third place to Tron Legacy and Yogi Bear, which isn't too surprising because those came out and stole some of the thunder. During its third weekend, it dropped only 24%, which was, again, the smallest decline among nationwide releases, and grossed $9.5 million. So while it came in a little disappointing, it held its own for the next few weekends, which is a good thing. January 2011, the film's 44th day in theaters, Voyage of the Dawn Treader, became 20th Century Fox's first film to gross $100 million in the U.S. and Canada since Alvin and the Chipmunks: The Squeak Wool. There you go.
Well, there you go. See, it did do okay.
It's the slowest Narnia film to reach $100 million in North America. It took much longer than Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, which took only 9 days, and Prince Caspian, which took 13 days. But you are more familiar with the books than I. So as far as relationship to the books goes...
Well, one puzzling element was this strange green fog that they decided to add, and that is not anywhere in the book. So I found that a little odd at first, but you know, I think when you go back and read those books, they're written for a different generation, and they do tend to not move along super quickly.
Okay.
And so I have a feeling that they probably felt like they needed something else to add tension and propel the movie to the end.
To keep it cranked up a little bit.
Yeah. I'm not sure that they really needed to. Okay. I mean, in the book, they're just sailing east. They don't know what they're going to find. They don't know what's there. They don't know. They're not really... All they're looking for are the Seven Lords of Narnia.
Okay.
So, they almost took the end of the book and moved it to the beginning, and then left the middle where it was, and then came back to the end at the end.
Okay.
And I think what they were trying to do, again, was create movement, create tension, and create a bigger motivation for the sailing east, rather than just, we're going.
We're going east.
Yeah.
Pick one of the four directions, we're taking one.
Yeah, because the Remendu, I think his name was, island, in the book, it comes right at the end.
Okay.
And in the movie, like I say, they moved it to the very first island that they came to, which it was kind of odd to do that, but I have a feeling that was probably the reason why.
So I have a question for you. As someone familiar with the books and who likes the books and has read them many times, do you have a preference of the book over the movie? Did you find that the movie, like, I think a lot of times you find that the movie doesn't do the book justice.
Yeah.
But as I always try and tell her, think of them as two separate things.
Yeah.
One is someone's interpretation in literature and...
And I'm getting better at doing that, I think.
Yeah.
And I think as, if I am to do it, if I'm to look at them that way, they were both equally good in their own way.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, of course they had to cut stuff out. They always do.
Yep.
But, they pretty much kept most of it in.
Okay.
Yeah, the very, very beginning of the movie where they, actually, that's not right. The first island they come to is not Ramandu's in the movie or the book. It's the island where they get taken and sold as slaves.
Okay.
And that was done really differently in the book. But again, I think it was to create interest and to move things along a little quicker. So, you know, it was, at first I was kind of lost. I'm like, what the heck? I had no idea what was going on. But and it didn't take me too long and I figured it out. So, cool. Yeah, there you go.
Excellent. So you would recommend it?
Yeah, for sure.
Would you say it's on par with the other three in your mind, or the other two in your mind, or not?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
They're doing a bit of a time warp as well, because the next film that they're doing in the series, so it's a good sign that they're moving on and doing another one.
Yeah.
They're doing The Magician's Nephew, which is actually the first book in the Narnia series by C.S. Lewis. And it doesn't involve any of the characters that we know so far, so that could be interesting.
Yeah.
It's probably a great opportunity for another director to come in and create their own kind of vision. Well,
yeah, the only character, there are two characters that are common.
Okay.
The Queen.
Okay, White
Queen. The White Queen.
Okay.
And Aslan.
Right.
Those two characters do also. And it's interesting because I'm not sure why they decided to make that one next. It would make more sense to do the next book in the series, really. Because, like, even though the Magician's Nephew is technically takes place at the beginning of, before anything else in the series, it was written last. So they could have waited. There would be no reason to do it next when it naturally flows into the next book.
Right.
Right? So it's kind of odd that they've chosen to do this, and I don't know for sure why they did, but...
So obviously Tilda Swinton and Liam Neeson have jobs secured for the next one.
They do.
I would think.
They do.
As they are, of course, Aslan and the White Witch.
Yes.
So there you go. The other two characters, the oldest sister and oldest brother that we became familiar with in Prince Caspian and The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, spent the film in England. No, America. Where are they? They've gone away somewhere.
Yeah, they're in America.
So they do make a couple of brief appearances, but the real focus is around the younger son and...
And
Edmund and Lucy.
The few appearances that they do make in the book, or in the movie, were obviously done to be able to pull them into the movie because they didn't exist in the book at all.
Right, so that people don't go, hey, what happened to those kids, those crazy kids?
Yeah.
So moving on, Connor has been pestering me half to death to finally see the SpongeBob SquarePants movie. As soon as he heard the M word associated with SpongeBob, he wanted to see it immediately. So we finally had an opportunity. You and Emily were busy dancing.
Yes.
Out at, Emily was in a dance competition this past weekend, so they were there. Won gold in both her performances. Yay.
All three.
There's three. She got the gold in all three? Mm-hmm. I didn't see the third gold pin. Where is it? Anyway, that's a private family issue we'll have to deal with later.
Yes.
So, and then we were going to Banff, Alberta, which is in the Rocky Mountains, for over the Mother's Day weekend. Emily has more competitions in Banff, and Banff is a beautiful location to be in, and for Mother's Day, and.
And it's this weekend, and so it's coming up, and it's going to be on Saturday, and we're so excited.
Yes. What?
Mm-hmm.
You're scaring me.
I was just...
No more Pop Rocks and Tab for you. So the SpongeBob SquarePants movie was released in 2004, obviously animated, based on the popular Nickelodeon TV series SpongeBob SquarePants. It includes the series' regular voices and creative forces behind it. Tom Kenny, who of course is the creator and voice of SpongeBob. Bill Fagerbach, who is voice of, oh, I always forget, what's his name? Oh, Patrick. the starfish. Clancy Brown is Mr. Krabs. Doug Lawrence is Sheldon Plankton. Roger Bumpus is Squidward Tentacles. So those guys were in it, all the regular voices. The movie also included Jeffrey Tambor doing a voice, Scarlett Johansson in it, Alec Baldwin. Who else? David Hasselhoff did a live appearance, which was quite funny. So that was cute. So it's basically like the Simpsons movie was. It's a regular half-hour animated series is given time to stretch its legs a little bit, tell a bigger story, have a bit bigger scope. So it was kind of funny.
And there was it good?
Yeah, it was good overall. I'm not a huge fan of SpongeBob. I'm not really sure why, but it's good. It's funny. It's silly. Connor really enjoyed it. Really, really enjoyed it. There was a bit of a nod to I Want to Rock by Twisted Sister, which kind of made me laugh. The to hear all the familiar voice people in it was great. To see David Hasselhoff in it was kind of funny. So that was cool. The film was generally well received by critics and fans. Rotten Tomatoes gave it a fresh rating of 68% based on 120 reviews, so that's above average. And Selected Critics gave the film a 70% fresh rating based on 33 reviews, so that's pretty high.
When was it in theaters?
2004.
Okay.
Metacritic gave the film a score of 66% based on 32 reviews, indicating that overall the impressions were generally favorable. So it was released on DVD first in March of 2005 and came out in a Blu-ray DVD combo pack in March 29th of this year, so not too long ago. So yeah, it's kind of fun. There's tension, there's hilarity, there's goofiness, there's familiar character stuff in it. Yeah, so if you or your children are fans of SpongeBob SquarePants, you will enjoy SpongeBob. It's bigger, it's spongier, it's more yellowier than the episode. So, 90 minutes grossed $140 million and a budget of just 30. So I'd say that's pretty successful.
And it was a good cast.
There you go. A very good cast. Good voice cast. And, you know, the SpongeBob phenomenon and the SpongeBob franchise shows no signs of slowing down. Still making episodes and all that.
Are they still?
I believe so, yes. I believe so. And I'm just going to talk amongst yourself.
Okay.
I'll just double check.
All of this is reminding me of our fish tank that has now been totally renamed to follow the SpongeBob theme, seeing as SpongeBob Mania has hit our home.
Okay.
So our beta fish, which used to be named Miracle.
Because it was a miracle that it was still alive.
Yes. Has become Patrick.
Oh.
And the snail that we bought has become... How did that go now? Okay, well, the moss ball that we have, which is a plant, is SpongeBob.
Okay.
And Patrick is the fish, and the snail is Gary.
Gotcha.
Yes.
And Gary, in case you don't know, is SpongeBob's pet snail who meows like a cat.
Yes, and Emily thought that was hilarious. She's like, oh, Mom, maybe our snail will meow like a cat. Let's call it Gary.
Weird. Mm-hmm. So SpongeBob, it was in season 8 from 2011 until now. And on Monday, January 3rd, 2011, Nickelodeon ordered 26 episodes for a ninth season, which is scheduled to begin airing in 2012. So that will bring the number of episodes up to 204 and will pass the 200-episode milestone.
Cool.
Yeah.
I guess.
So there you go. and SpongeBob SquarePants with a ninth season will become the first Nicktoon to reach a 200-episode milestone.
Well, there you go. Yay,
Connor's,
SpongeBob.
Connor is a big fan of SpongeBob and a big fan of all things Nickelodeon and Nicktoons, so there you go.
Yes. Well, he is a boy.
He is. And I still don't get the SpongeBob thing, but I'm trying. So, thanks for tuning in, everybody. That about does it for us for this week. Oh, by the way, run out and see Thor. Thor comes out this Friday.
Right.
And even if I'm going alone, I'm going, just so you know.
All right.
So everybody have a great week. Enjoy Thor. Enjoy the spring. Enjoy whatever you're doing. And
watch The Royal Wedding if you haven't seen it
yet. That's right. Track it down. You can find it on all sorts of sources.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying. So everybody, enjoy your week. As always, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for the emails from regular listeners and friends, Walt and everybody who keeps sending me emails.
Walt said something about a picture of me and...
Oh yeah, last week's if you go to DVD Verdict Presents and look at last week's View from the Couch episode, there was a photo of an 80s chick and he was wondering if that was you.
Oh.
So, no, it wasn't Walt, it me. Wasn't Michelle, but could have been. She's that person inside, on the inside.
Okay,
so
then.
Everybody have a great week. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to View from the Couch, a DVD Verdict podcast. View from the Couch is available exclusively on DVDverdict.com. Watch for new episodes every week. Thanks for your continued support. Kent and Michelle appreciate it. Be sure to visit DVDverdict.com for the latest in DVD and theatrical release reviews, DVD release information, talent interviews, event coverage, and much, much more.